Sunday evenings where the sermon is shorter than the reading. On the other hand. So what's the background? There's the obvious background within Deuteronomy. That is Moses' farewell. For all of my life so far and all of my preaching life, about 30 odd years, I would have known that people have farewell thoughts. Then all of a sudden you start having them. So it reads differently and more powerfully. So Moses is pulling together as he opens up Deuteronomy, what we have is Deuteronomy. He's pulling together, if you like, the main bits in these first four chapters. He is pulling out the things that are so crucial for the Israelites, for, in one sense, his children, as they go forward into the land that he won't enter. And back of this part of that kind of farewell, summing up, exhorting, rereading of the law, re-giving of the law, back of this one is, of course, the second commandment. So let me read to you the second commandment, Exodus 20, verse 4. You shall not make for yourselves a carved image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above or is in the earth beneath or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or serve them. For I, the Lord your God, Yahweh your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing steadfast love to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments. So as Moses pulls from the Ten Commandments and from the rest of the law that followed that in Exodus, as he pulls from that those things which they really, really need to know. Here in what we have as chapter 4, he focuses on the import of the second commandment. Now, we're not going to look at the whole of chapter 4, and we'll just set the context from verse 9 following briefly, and then we're going to focus on verses 9 through to 31. So in verses 1 to 4, Moses is saying again, follow, keep, just keep observing, follow the laws, the decrees and laws I'm about to teach you. And in verses 1 through 4, he's saying, follow this so that. There's a very famous psychology experiment done back in the 70s when offices might have like one huge photocopier sitting in a corridor somewhere, and you had to queue to get to use the photocopier. Nowadays, it's different, obviously. So an experiment was done on how to get people to do what you want them to do, even if it goes against the grain. And it's sometimes known as just the photocopier experiment. And so it was set up in the way that one of the assistants of the psychology prof who was leading the research would turn up when there was a long queue with just two or three sheets and would say, do you mind if I just go ahead? And then there was another group with another assistant who would come up and say, do you mind if I just go ahead because I've just got these to do quickly? And almost every time somebody in the first group went up and said, would you mind if I go ahead, they were told politely where to go. Not just the back of the queue either. And in the second group, they were, yeah, go ahead, that's fine. Almost every time. And the difference was that the person in the second group gave a reason. Because. So they could say, okay, yeah, that's a good reason. Go ahead, that's fine. And they were prepared to wait in the second group because they had a reason. God was like way ahead of the photocopier experiment. Surprise, surprise, he's a better psychologist than any of us. So Moses gives a reason. So follow the laws and decrees so that, and we have this repetition all the way through this passage of sort of so that, for clauses that give us the whys, the reasons to do something. Follow them so that, verse 1, you may live and may go in and take possession of the land. This is serious stuff. If you don't follow these, you will die. And you won't get in. And to emphasize the gravity of that, and that live means you'll live, and if you don't, you won't, he references back to what we have in Numbers 25 and the incident at Baal Peor when the children of Israel committed physical and spiritual adultery with the Moabite women. And they didn't live. By sword and by plague, the men of that generation, most of them, were taken out. 24,000 died by plague alone. So immediately, we now, reading this, are forced, we are compelled to take God seriously. Remember what Paul wrote to the church in Galatia? Behold, God is not mocked. Whatsoever a man shall sow, that shall he also reap. It's very easy for us to domesticate God, just to have God in our pocket, just to have a God who suits us, as Richard was talking about this morning and alluding to in prayer. But that's not God. That might be the way the world functions with its gods, but our God is God. Yahweh is not like anything else that's called a god. He does not dance to our tune. Even a good tune like, hey, let's live longer. And then we get a second urging by Moses in 5 through 8 to keep following. And so he gives another reason. And the second reason why they are to follow is so that you may be wise and witnesses. So if we were to pick up in verse 6, observe them carefully, all the commands, decrees, laws, commands, the word of God. Observe them carefully, for this will show your wisdom and understanding to the nations who will hear about all these decrees and say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. Wise is more than clever. You can be really clever and know all the verses in the Bible, left, upside down, backwards to front, all the rest of it, with the references, and be very clever and not be wise. Clever is knowing that tomato is a fruit. Wise is knowing never to put one in a fruit salad. Wise is how we live and what we do with what we know. And as God's people did not just know and have written somewhere God's commands and tablets of stone, but lived them, that is, observed them, obeyed them, followed them, walked in them, as they did them, then they would be known as people who were wise and understanding. Moses has gone to say, for what other nation is so great as to have their gods near them, the way that Yahweh, our God, is near us whenever we pray to him? And what other nation is so great as to have such righteous decrees and laws as this body of laws that I'm setting before you today? You're supposed to be a witness to the nations. The whole idea in God's global mission was that then, as now with the church, God's people were to be a witness to him, to the nations, so that the nations would be drawn to God, not to their political growth as a nation, not to their power base as a nation, but to Yahweh. To forsake all the other gods with all their names, the Baals and Ashtoreths and all the other names, Marduk and all that lot, but to be drawn to Yahweh. And the people's wisdom, their living, not what they did when they gathered together to worship just, but the way they spent all the rest of their lives, the way they organized themselves in towns and villages and cities, the way they did their agriculture, the way they treated their children and their aging parents, the way they just managed life and got on with it, it would be wise and full of understanding. Because why? Well, because their God is near them when they call out to him. He's with them. And he's given them right, good, wholesome decrees and laws. I want to be part of that. That's the idea. So he's given these sets of reasons as to why they should follow. If you follow, this good stuff will happen. But then in 9 through 24, which is really one section, it's not kind of separated out like that in the ESV. But in 9 through 24, he says, well, follow them because, and now it's not a because of something good will happen. Now he's saying, follow them because you've got a weakness. Make sure you follow them. Make sure you watch yourself. Watch yourselves closely. Make sure you don't just forget. You remember, if you're here this morning, when Richard was preaching, in many ways is actually the parallel passage to Deuteronomy 4, and Richard alluded to that, in Hebrews 2, 1 through 4. In that passage, these two words, drift and neglect, effortless activities. Here in chapter 4, verse 9, don't forget. It's effortless to forget. That's the only way you can forget. If somebody tells you to forget something, you remember it. You have a fatal weakness. Because when you forget these laws instead of observing them, when you know you've got them written down somewhere, but just forget them and don't walk in them, your hearts will turn to idolatry. Second commandment. So 9 through 24 are the exposition, if you like, of the second commandment. If you just let them slip, if you don't teach them to your children and your grandchildren, if you don't remember the time when you stood before God, then what will happen? As sure as night follows day, is you will make for yourself an idol. You'll break the second commandment. And so, to introduce that danger, and to introduce the power of the second commandment, Moses in verses 9 through 14 says, look, when you were there, remember, God never gave you an image. You never saw him. He never gave you any signs or symbols. There was no form. You just heard his word. What he gave you was his word. So it's like his word and him. Nothing between. No intermediary there, no other thing to fasten your attention onto. You've got him, and he speaks. Him and his words. And that's what happened at Horeb. And so Moses builds on that and says, verse 15, you saw no form of any kind the day the Lord spoke to you at Horeb out of the fire. Therefore, again, watch yourselves carefully so that you do not become corrupt and make for yourselves an idol. And then we've got the string of idols that they might make and indeed did make. And when Ezekiel is given a vision of what was going on back in the temple in Jerusalem, break through the wall, see this secret chamber. It's all there. Even in the temple in Jerusalem, it was all there. But do you notice what he's saying in verses 15 to 20? What is the tendency? What is that fatal bias that we have, that thing that will turn us away to something? He's not saying that you will worship the gods of the nations round about. Now, there are warnings against that, and there are warnings against the tendency to do that. But at this point, expounding the second commandment, not the first commandment, he's not talking about the gods that other people make. He's saying, you have a tendency. There is something in our fallen hearts which will make an idol. We can be seduced by the idols of the world around us, but within the community of God's people, without becoming worldly, in inverted commas, we make our own idols. And look at what it is that he's listing here and that the people did. He's listing the things that God has given to us. The things he's given to us in his grace and his mercy that he has apportioned out to us and to all humanity. Look at how God has blessed you. The danger that he's alluding to in 15 through 20 is the danger of us trusting, invoking, thanking the things that have been good rather than the God who gave them. You go to a place and you've been blessed there. There's a form of worship and it's blessed you. Was it the place? Was it the form of worship? No. It was God. You listen to a particular preacher. You like a particular author. You're blessed. Is it the author? It's God. There is no good and perfect gift which does not come from the Father above, the Father of lights. There is no giver of anything with eternal value that ultimately is not God. And he has his gifts. But our danger is always to rely on the thing given which we can see and feel and touch, taste and smell, and forget to see over the shoulder, as it were, the God who made the very thing which is blessing us. And so the peculiar bias, weakness, the peculiar fatal weakness in our Christian hearts and communities is to start doing what Calvin wrote about, you know, what does it mean to have a God? We start trusting the things that are familiar to us, the people who have been a source of blessing, the way we do things. And we want to perpetuate those and repeat them. And we get scared that somehow or another we've been blessed through those. If we don't keep doing those, God won't bless us. Forgetting that it was never the form. It was never the visible thing that was really doing the work. It was Yahweh, our God, who is near. Closer than the things we can see. Closer than the things he has made and given us and gifted us with. So close that when they go away, he doesn't. When they lose their power or their novelty, he doesn't. But of course, God is very realistic about his people. And so in the sort of the last section of what we were reading together from verse 25 following, Moses gives a kind of a warning. And if you notice as we were reading, it's a warning that starts off with ifs, but ends with when.
Because God knows the hearts of his people, and he knows ours. And so, verse 25, after you have had children and grandchildren and have lived in the land a long time, if... So from then on, it sounds conditional. You know, they may become corrupt and make an idol, doing evil in the eyes of the Lord, or they may not. You know, if you do this, then what will happen? Well, exile will happen. But then as we read on, by the time we get to verse 29, but if from there you seek the Lord your God, you will find him, you will look for him with all your heart and with all your soul. And it's still ifs and then, but under those circumstances, when you're looking for God, when you are in distress and all these things have happened to you, no longer if you are in distress. What's happening there? It is that God is saying through Moses, you will wander. In the hymn that we sang this morning, it was highlighted for us, prone to wander, Lord, I feel it. Prone to leave the God I love. And that's what happened, of course. What Moses is saying here isn't just a sort of a description of maybes. It's a description of what happened. And there are times in our lives when we have grown cold towards God and we've still been maintaining the form, but the power is gone. But then we discover that mercy triumphs over justice, as the scriptures say. That the God who delivered upon the Israelites the exile that he had warned them about, first to the 10 northern tribes, off to Samaria, and then the southern tribes, Judah with little Benjamin kind of wrapped up in there, carted off to Babylon for 70 years. Not only is the warning true, but the promise is true. If from there you seek the Lord, your God, you will find him if you look for him with all your heart and with all your soul. When you are in distress and all these things have happened to you, then in later days you will return to the Lord your God and obey him. Why? For the Lord your God is a merciful God. He is a jealous God, verse 24, consuming fire, but he is also a merciful God. Maybe you might not be at the evening service if this was not true, but maybe you're here and you know your heart's quite a long way from God. That he might be near to you, but you're nowhere near him, if you know what I mean. But our God is a merciful God. He will not abandon or destroy you or forget the covenant with your forefathers, which he confirmed to them by oath. And if that was true of the old covenant, if that was true of the law, in the terms in which Paul writes about his ministry in 2 Corinthians, how much more true is that in the new covenant? How much more true is that when all the law has been fulfilled for you by Jesus? How much more true is that when his by grace you are his forever? How much more true is it for us all that the end will be better than anything else? How much more true of it is of us when we can look back through time and see that Jesus won forever and know that mercy triumphs over judgment.
The second commandment, and what God said then and Moses repeated about the jealous God, is not a commandment that sets his judgment over against his love. It is full of love. It is a plea through Moses from God, a cry from the heart of God as he looks upon this nation whom he called his son, the apple of his eye, the love of his heart, the ones he delighted to be near and amongst. It is a cry from his heart, a cry of love. Let's pray.